This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Flights are getting off the ground again at U.S. airports after the FAA ordered a ground stoppage a few hours ago. The problem? An outage in a computer system that's critical to flight safety. Correspondent Chris Van Cleve begins team coverage from Reagan National.
I think you'll see airlines make the sacrifices today as far as delays and cancellations so that they're ready tomorrow for a normal day. All of that, of course, is assuming this NOTAM system, Notice to Air Missions system, continues to work.
I'm Jim Crisul at Piedmont Triad International Airport in Greensboro, North Carolina. Once again, there's frustration and uncertainty at the nation's airports.
I'm going to ask if they can rebook maybe with a different airline. I think I might just be stuck.
It's just really disappointing.
We had to completely change our plans.
Thousands of flights have already been affected today nationwide. It could take several days to get flight schedules back to normal.
There are more than 5,000 delays in the U.S. right now. The White House says there's no evidence of a cyber attack. The Department of Transportation is investigating. Millions of Californians are still under flood watches as heavy rain in the L.A. area shifts north. Molly Engelhart lives on a farm in Ventura County.
No water for 2 years, and then more water than we got in 2 years in 24 hours is not the business.
There is more stormy weather in the forecast for next week. Security, top of mind, as many students return to the University of Idaho for the first time since four classmates were stabbed to death in their off-campus home in November. University Provost Tori Lawrence.
We have a lot of different programming that's being developed right now around safety and security. Everything from self-defense, there's been an interest in that.
The suspect in the murder is scheduled to make another court appearance tomorrow. The Supreme Court says New York can keep enforcing a sweeping new law that bans guns from sensitive areas while a court challenge plays out. The High Court has turned away a plea by gun owners. They wanted justices to lift a federal appeals court order that put a temporary hold on a decision by a lower court to block parts of that law. The Dow's up 75 points. At last night's Golden Globe Awards on NBC,
Mr. Spielberg, step right up here.
Steven Spielberg took the top prize, Best Movie Drama, for The Fabelmans as the show returned after a diversity scandal. CBS's Matt Piper.
Host Gerard Carmichael opened the show taking some swipes at the Hollywood Foreign Press Association and its long absence of black members.
And I'll tell you why I'm here. I'm here because I'm black.
The association's lack of diversity was the main reason it was not televised last year.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Two courts have ruled a Northern Wisconsin Sheriff's Department conducted an illegal search of a detective's Dropbox account. Back in 2017, Stephen Bowers was charged with two felony counts of misconduct in public office. He reportedly shared the files with producers of a true crime TV show. The courts say Bowers had a right to privacy since the Dropbox account was private and that Taylor County deputies did not have a right to search without a warrant. The weather was bad enough overnight to close schools and other services in and around Chippewa Falls and the surrounding area today. Freezing rain and snow made for a slippery glaze on roads this morning. Driving is expected to be tricky all day. In sports, Michigan State rallied to beat the Badgers last night. Tonight, the Bucks are at Atlanta and Marquette hosts UConn. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
The devil's advocates, because freedom.
But Dom, we've been following a couple of big stories this week. Truck convoy leader has no idea where he is and is driving in circles around I-495. He didn't know precisely where he was going anyways or where he was at the time. Apparently, he put the convoy back on the road, headed back up north.
And now he's back in Scranton. So
I totally would have protested this tyranny, but damn, the traffic was so bad.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms.
Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
The Earl Ingram Show is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I am joined by my guest, and I'm happy he's here. He's Mr. Michael Lappin. He is with the Department of Health and Human Services. He's the Administrator of Behavioral Health. Is that correct? What did I leave out?
That is my title, the Behavioral Health Administrator.
It's good to have you back in the studio. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, and thank you for accepting the invitation, Mike. Let's go back to, we had you here, I don't know, several months ago, and we were talking about the opening of a new facility. We were talking about a new direction for Milwaukee County Behavioral Health, something that was long time coming, a facility on Watertown Plank Road that I don't know might have had as many as 200 beds at one time.
I wanted to say it was closer to 930
beds. 930
beds,
and I thought that 200 was a small number, and really took up a large swath of land out on Watertown Plank Road. And there had been, you know, I had loved ones who spent some time out there. My own son spent some time out there. And clearly that method of dealing with people with mental health is kind of a throwback era. One of my favorite movies of all times was Once Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And so, you know, there was a time when that's the way mental health was treated. Am I correct in that assessment?
It's true. And Ken Kesey, you know, the story portrays a system that's probably relatively accurate, where mental health is in some ways used as a punishment. You know, if the characters in the film, you know, R.P. McMurphy, he's basically a con man who gets himself into a psychiatric facility because he thinks that it's going to be better than jail, right, essentially. And it sort of paints this picture of this asylum care where people don't have rights. And in the film, many of the patients are actually there voluntarily,
right?
Which is interesting. But again, it sort of portrays the old model. You know, just for perspective, the original facility, which opened on March 26th, 1880 on the county grounds, was called the Milwaukee Asylum for Chronic Insane. And the patients were called inmates. And so that original facility, which operated for 80 years or whatever before being replaced by more modern facilities, right, in the 60s, the perspective was that people who had mental health issues were inmates who should be kept away from society permanently. And in some ways, that reflected the reality of the day, because in those days, there weren't medications that effectively treated diseases like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. Essentially, there was no way to help these folks other than to keep them safe and away from society.
So I think that it's important that people understand that as we talk about where we are today, because I also remember when then President Ronald Reagan made a decision that our nation could no longer afford to house and warehouse people with mental illnesses. You're a young guy, you probably don't remember that, but I remember Ronald Reagan making that decision, and it was almost as if our government made a decision that we no longer could afford that, and then those people were basically turned out to the street.
Yeah, I think the most impactful challenge or change actually happens in 1999 with the Olmstead decision. So the Olmstead decision comes down. It's a federal decision that says that people must be kept in the least restrictive setting. And there's a whole history before that. But that, I think, for Milwaukee County, that was the most impactful decision. There's a number of other legal precedents, which we don't have to get into. But
right.
Trust me when I say that there's a couple of very impactful Supreme Court, both federal Supreme Court decisions and state Supreme Court decisions, that limit the ability to serve people in a setting, an inpatient or residential or long-term setting, against their will, and basically say you must serve people in that least restrictive setting. Over the last 10 years or so, the laws even have got more challenging for the county. Again, very particularly to people who require some sort of care but don't want it, the threshold for forcing them has become more of a challenge. And so after Olmstead, and it took us a long time, but the county sought to find alternatives for people to those long-term care units. The first units to be downsized in Milwaukee County were long-term care units where people lived there their whole lives, essentially. And a lot of those people are being cared for today, but they're being cared for in smaller, more home-like settings, adult family homes, group homes. The other thing was long-term, people with mental illness, people who had an intellectual disability, people who had cerebral palsy, all sorts of folks were sort of grouped together and housed in asylums. As treatment and recovery became embraced in the 60s and as the drugs have gotten better, the sort of mental health population is sort of identified as its own thing and to sort of have a different approach. You know, today there are really great medications that help people. You know, in my career, I started this work in the 90s. We had very few tools to treat schizophrenia effectively that didn't have horrible side effects. Today it's better. So there's just this really complicated thing that we got a lot better at treating people. We were forced to come up with alternative solutions. But that doesn't mean that today everybody who needs significant care is getting it. But it's really complicated as to why. And that's the conversation.
So I get it. Nobody ever said it was going to be easy. I would say to you, and this certainly is out of your control, out of Milwaukee County's control, but for the people who've made the decisions, that people who have mental illnesses, people who have been diagnosed and at one time or other in their lives have been court mandated to take medications, the fact that a system that at one point in time court mandated people to take medications, now all of a sudden have said that these same people who they've, you know, diagnosed as mentally ill, accept their opinion on the fact that this is what's in the best interest of them. That's where I think it's a stickling point that it's hard for people to understand. When you know that it's for instance, if you know somebody has cancer and you've been treating them for cancer and all of a sudden now you say, well, we know they still have cancer, but they don't want to take the medication. But yeah, they have a right to do it, but in the long run, it's not going to be beneficial to them.
Right. That's a great way to put it, though. We do allow people to make choices about their health care. For instance, so, you know, people with diabetes,
they do
frequently have medical emergencies if they eat wrong. So
right.
They eat too much sugar, you go to a party, you have some cake. And even though that person could tell you, yeah, it's probably not the best thing, I'm going to make this choice. For people with mental illness, the threshold for taking that choice away from them is much higher today than it was 50 years ago, probably much higher than it was 5 years ago. And I think that is a challenge for the community at large. It's a challenge for the people that do the work, both my staff and the people we partner with, because there are situations, you know, just being totally transparent, there are situations where everybody involved in a person's care knows that they have some risk and that they're probably not making the best choice. But in order to force them into care, we have to satisfy a very stringent legal requirement to prove that they're dangerous in the moment. And that's really tricky. And in Wisconsin, we're one of two states that the really only way to do it is to involve law enforcement. There's a couple of other ways to approach it, but for the majority of people, the only way to write the emergency detention, which is the term for the document, it must be initiated by a law enforcement officer per state law.
Okay. And so what I would say to that, and that's something that's out of your control at Milwaukee County Mental Health, is that people who have loved ones who have fallen under that guideline will push back on that 100%, because that strict guideline that you're talking about is the difference between life and death in people's lives. And so it's hard to accept this, the fact that law enforcement and somebody else who doesn't know this person from Adam, and a system that doesn't know that person from Adam, somehow has the final say over that human being than their own loved one who knows the person. That makes no sense whatsoever to me. I know that's the guideline. I know those are the rules. The issue is that those rules don't make any sense to the people whose loved one they're talking about trying to protect.
And I know it's very frustrating, and I've shared with you, I too have had significant personal experience and family members experience right. The system. I've had a family member be hospitalized at the old Behavioral Health Division hospital as well. And I will say that it is very frustrating that the challenge is the laws, the decisions that led to the laws changing, probably did make sense. There was a time when it was just simply too easy to hold a family member, hold someone against their will indefinitely. And so,
And nobody, just for the sake of clarity, nobody's ever talking about holding somebody against their will. We're talking about while a person is in crises to get them back into a situation where they can be safe for themselves. So I want to be 100% clear. Nobody's talking about holding somebody indefinitely against their will. That's the difference. And that's where many of us who are dealing with people who have mental illnesses are pushing back, because those decisions that were made to me and many others don't include the family members who see their loved ones deteriorating. Listen, we got to go to a break. My guest is Mr. Michael Lappin. He is the administrator of Department of Health and Human Services Behavioral Health. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. What do you say? We'll be right back.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, That's design.garden.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A blend of clouds and sun this afternoon with highs around 45. Southeast winds around 5 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 33 tonight. Cloudy skies. Overcast again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 36. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times Friday with daytime highs approaching 30. 34 Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 36 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Michael Lappin. He is the administrator of the Behavioral Health Unit of the Department of Health and Human Services. So Mike, I want to go here. There is a mental health board. What is the name of that board?
So there's the Milwaukee County Mental Health Board.
Okay, so the Milwaukee County Mental Health Board, walk us through this, because we don't know. It has jurisdiction over what happens with the mental health portion of... Explain.
Correct. So in 2014, there was an act of the legislature, Act 203, which became law. It created the Milwaukee County Mental Health Board. For those policy wonks out there, and I know you probably have a few out in your audience... this is 51.41 of Wisconsin state statutes. Chapter 51 is the mental health code for the state. 51.42 is the chapter that basically governs county behavioral health programs. Wisconsin is a county-based system. That means the state makes the rules. They give the county a fixed amount of money every year to follow those rules as part of the state-county contract. But local resources basically fill in the gaps. So the county has substantial responsibility under state law, but not total funding. So there's a blend of local funding, state funding, and then revenue that we can earn from Medicaid and whatnot, grants. The Mental Health Board, as part of this act and the statute, took responsibility for mental health and substance use policy, funding, decisions from the County Board of Milwaukee in 2014. And really, that's the governing body that... For instance, any contract that the Behavioral Health Division enters into with any provider agency over $100,000 must be approved by the Mental Health Board. The Mental Health Board approved my appointment in 2016 to my job. The Mental Health Board approves all policies and expenditures related to mental health or substance use.
So let me just pose this. So if something that the Mental Health Board has approved becomes a liability, the county is responsible for what the mental health board decision that they made. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, I would say in the same way that if the county board or any governing board, you know, like a village board makes such a decision, they're the governing body for the behavioral health services. Correct.
And so this board, mental health board, along with the county, because looking at how much money it costs to house people, and not just people with mental illnesses, it could be people who are substance abuse. But in today's climate, that's a lot of money, and a lot of money to pay for people to do the servicing, to keep the facility up all sorts of ancillary things that people don't see. And if you look at what it was costing to run Watertown Plank Road, I couldn't even begin to imagine something as massive as that facility. And it's certainly had to become a strain on the budget of Milwaukee. I'm just you know, stop me if I'm going in the wrong direction.
No. So when the statute was made, basically the statute says that the mental health board shall receive between $53 and $65 million in tax levy.
And from what year are we talking?
And so this was established in 2014. So okay. I wasn't around until 2016.
I know.
But the philosophy was, I think they looked back at the allocations to behavioral health services historically and substance use, and established a range between $53 and $65 million. When I started, we were in the $56-57 million range, I believe, by 2017, 2018. We are currently at the $53 million floor. But the caveat there is we've been able to secure many new funding streams, grants, federal dollars.
To keep up with inflation and all those things.
So, you know, yes, we receive less tax levy, but our budget
has increased
dramatically. Before I started with the hospital and everything, the budget was in the $190 million range. And we're projecting well over $225 million for 2023 without the hospital. And the hospital is $32 million.
So that's Milwaukee County Mental Health? Or is that the Department of Health and Human Services?
Milwaukee County, the Behavioral Health Division, Behavioral Health Services budget approved
over 220.
It's like two. I forget the final number. $230 million-ish.
So a decision was rendered that we could no longer afford the facility out of Watertown Plank Road.
I don't think that's particularly accurate. I will say what happened was the building was built in originally. The idea was presented in 1972. In 1973, a commission of Milwaukee representatives, neighborhood folks, professionals, board members, older people, actually made a recommendation in a book called Old Problems, New Directions. It's documented for history. And they said that the county should get out of the hospital business, that the county should instead partner with private organizations and should really focus on improving the quality of services delivered through the community, really focus on community-based systems of care. And said we shouldn't build a new hospital. And then, of course, a decision was made to build the new hospital. The hospital was at that time proposed to be like 300 or 400 beds. It ended up being built for 900 beds. So when the hospital opened in 1979, and it was actually the final sort of the groundbreaking ceremony, or the actual dedication ceremony was actually hosted by First Lady Rosalynn Carter on March 27, 1980, by the way. At that time, it was built for 900 people. So you could argue, just objectively, that it was overbuilt from day one.
All right, listen, we got to go to break. My guest is Mr. Michael Lappin, Department of Health and Human Services, Administrator of Behavioral Health. We'll be right back.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News special report. Airline flights are gradually resuming across the country, hours after the FAA ordered a ground stoppage because of an outage in a critical safety notification system. These passengers were stuck at the airport in Greensboro, North Carolina.
As far as the flight goes, try to find another flight.
It was delayed and delayed again and delayed again and delayed again and finally canceled.
There are still more than 4,500 delays this hour. Correspondent Chris Van Cleve has more from Reagan in International.
What the airlines expect to be able to do, assuming this FAA system continues working, is they're likely going to ask for what they call a ground delay program, basically reduce the number of expected arrivals and departures so that you don't have all of those planes trying to pull out at once and you just get a traffic jam on the taxiway and the runway.
The White House says there is no evidence of a cyber attack, but the Department of Transportation is investigating. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinier with your headlines. Wisconsin needs more housing if the working age population is to grow. Current estimates show over 140,000 more housing units are needed by 2030. The number of new houses built in Wisconsin has been declining, with about 260,000 built in the 90s compared to 150,000 in the last decade. Wisconsin County's Association Director Dale Knapp tells WisPolitics, single-family homes are needed if we want to attract workers to Wisconsin. Knapp says high interest rates and a recent slowdown in new construction has added to the problem. Cigarette sales significantly down in Wisconsin over the last 20 years. A Wisconsin Policy Forum report shows sales dropped from 420 million packs of cigarettes sold in 2001 to just under 193 million last year. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Mental health challenges impact us all in some way. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services is working hard to meet these challenges, ushering a new model of mental health care, redesigned with you in mind. This community-based system meets people where they're at, with culturally competent services, better access, and no wrong doors to begin the journey. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services, here for you, close to home. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health emergency, contact 414-257-7222.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
The Republican Party on a national level, how many years did they investigate Hillary and Bill? They're still going to that.
They're still looking for her emails, right? But they don't look in the Trump septic tank for half the top secret classified documents that he was flushing during his term. When one party doesn't care about governing, just don't allow anything to happen when the Democrats are in charge, and then they think the American people are going to get boonswoggled into voting Republican again.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yeah!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Michael Lappin. He's the administrator of the Department of Health and Human Services Behavioral Health. Sir, before we went to break, you were talking about the history of the old facility.
So what happened is this facility gets built. It's way overbuilt from the start. When you have a facility with a certain number of beds, there is pressure to keep those beds full. So those beds stayed full for many years. And fast forward, the Olmstead decision happens in 1999. By then, the county has already settled.
The Olmstead decision meaning what?
The Olmstead decision is this decision that a Supreme Court decision that says that people must be treated in the least restrictive setting that meets their needs. The county had already settled a lawsuit back in 1991 that said they should get people out of these long-term care units and serve them with community programs instead. So we get into the 2000s, the census at the Behavioral Health Division Hospital is dipping around 100. And at that time, it is just obviously doesn't make sense to operate a million square foot facility at great cost if those services could be provided in a more efficient and effective facility. I will also say that when the building was designed, it didn't even remotely come close to current safety and governing standards right. for a hospital. So what people were facing in about 2013, 2014 was $35 million to renovate a million square foot overbuilt facility or go a different direction. Two options were considered. One was to build a new county hospital and operate it. The other option was to contract that out to a provider who, with more experience and capability, get it out of government's hands and then have the mental health board and my department more or less manage the quality and the pathways to that service. So that's what was taken.
So let's fast forward that to today and what brings us to this point in time in this conversation. A decision was rendered and made to bring people into the community-based model as opposed to the one that was there before. And in your estimation, is that being successful?
I would say for the most part, so just for perspective, about 3,000 people are served across a couple programs, two different levels of care in our community right now. And I would say the great majority of those folks are doing pretty well with that level of care and with that level of supervision. There's a significant population of folks as a result of their illness, which can be very challenging. So people with a serious and persistent illness, people with schizophrenia, people with bipolar disorder, often their course of their illness is not linear. So they might do really well for a very long time. Something changes in their life. A new stressor emerges. Their medications stop being as effective as they once were.
Or they stop taking them
altogether, which, you know, there are reasons why people might make that choice. And then they start to have problems. The way the law works is if it turns into an involuntary situation, it takes time to get people under a commitment or get, and it requires a certain level of proof that is often the burden of proof strongly skews towards the patient and their decision making.
So the way the law works is a misnomer. Because the law and the way whoever came up with these ideas are set to give people, not all, but some, who have bipolar and schizophrenia and who can really get into some horrible places from time to time in their lives, basically now are given the ability to make a decision that is not in the best interest of the safety of themselves. And so this new law or the law does not offer an opportunity for that to be corrected because it leaves it in the hands of people based on the law that has no love or emotion for the very people they're claiming to care for. You can't expect a law or a system to have emotion and to understand what is happening to the person that they are supposedly looking out for. So,
I would say the law supports the civil rights of the folks impacted. The great majority of people who have a mental health issue or substance use issue do
seek treatment. Substance abuse is different than somebody who is bipolar and schizophrenic. Substance abuse can be overcome. For the most part, people who are bipolar and schizophrenic will carry that with them the remainder of their lives.
It is true that those diagnoses are lifelong diagnoses, but many people with those illnesses and who experience those illnesses have a very strong and fruitful recovery.
With the help of medication in most instances.
In most instances,
so when
correct.
You take the medication away, you basically have taken away their opportunities to overcome what it is they're dealing with. So it's semantics, and I don't want to get caught up in that aspect of it. So when you have these the facilities that are out there now. There's a facility that's supposed to replace the Milwaukee County mental health system, where now how many beds are available at this new that you've contracted with to replace Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex? How many beds are available there?
So today they have two adult units. They have they're serving 24 adults and 10 youth. The facility is built and designed for 120 beds. They've been open about 11 months. And when we entered this arrangement, the contract that was approved by the Mental Health Board essentially says that Universal Health Services, Granite Hills Hospital, which is just about 60th and National in West Dallas, is the county's primary receiving facility for people under involuntary care. In just regular terms, those beds were intended to replace the beds that were operated at the Behavioral Health Division on Watertown Plank Road, you know, on or about, you know, 2014, 2015. At that time, we had about 50 beds at the mental health complex. That number actually shrunk during the pandemic to at one point we're at 24 adult beds and 10 kids beds. The contract with Granite Hills basically says that the county has the right to secure any available bed in that facility and that we are the payer of last resort. So if someone doesn't have insurance or they can't be reimbursed by insurance, the county has a relationship to pay for those beds at Granite Hills. We are their priority customer. The intent was to have 120 beds for us to work with. Today, there is only 24 adults and 10 kids. But we also have relationships with Aurora Psychiatric Hospital, with Rogers Memorial, with Ascension, St. Francis, other places yeah. take county patients.
So how many patients are housed in those facilities? Not many.
On any given day.
It's fair to say not many.
At this time, probably about the same number that are actually at Granite Hills. And that's actually historical. Many county patients that come through our county emergency room have always been admitted by Aurora, by Ascension. And many times it's because those patients have an existing treatment relationship in those systems and request it.
So again, my thing is, in order sometimes to get people to become stable, not long term, it requires something called a petition. Right.
And so that is a pathway to involuntary care. We mentioned earlier, law enforcement has to be involved in most cases. The exception is a pathway called a three-party petition. So this is where any three people can submit testimony, and they do this in Milwaukee through our Corporation Counsel's office. And for those of you who have had experience with this or who need this, there is a brochure on the website. There is a pathway through the web. You can reach out to me, or I'm sure Mr. Ingram can provide that link. But what needs to happen is this testimony is submitted through Corporation Counsel. It's reviewed by a court commissioner. It must prove the same things that law enforcement must document on that emergency detention. It has to prove that the person has a mental illness, that the person is treatable, and that the person is imminently dangerous.
Let me ask you... law enforcement has to make a determination that this person is a danger to himself and others. Why is that stipulation included?
That is the way the law is written in Wisconsin, 5115.
So this is why I'm saying the fact that we are going to say law enforcement, which gets to see this person right at that point in time and at no other time, has the power to determine whether or not this person is dangerous to himself and others, and yet the loved one who knows that person better than anybody is not included.
Yeah, and it's a fair point. I think the idea behind the law, or what happened was that's your first responder. When people are in a life or death situation, they call 911. If someone's in a life or death mental health crisis, they call 911. I would say that's how it came to be that law enforcement had this role. And then law enforcement, just like my department, has to follow the rules. The rules are very strict around the dangerousness must be observable, and it must be immediately, you have to be able to assess that it's immediately could lead to the death of the person.
So I would say this, at the root of all of this is a system that gives the decision making to people who don't even know who it is they're dealing with.
But the difference would be that the three-party petition pathway at least allows a family member to testify to dangerousness that they've observed within the last 60 days. So the police are limited to what they see in the moment, what is being told to them at the moment. They have to make this decision. Many times when the police show up, people change their behavior.
I got to tell you, I've had conversations with people who had tried through three-party petition and not gotten what they know is the fact that their loved one is in crisis. And because of the rules and the guidelines with that three-party petition, in many instances, it leaves people in a position where they just don't know. There's nothing they can do.
It does. The petition does require you to still make those, prove those things in court beyond a reasonable doubt. And the difference, though, is that at least that petition considers things outside of the moment. I think the challenge and where people are the most disappointed, and I'll just give you real examples. I've heard numerous people have complained to me. We went to your new emergency center on 12th and Walnut. We brought our family member there and they didn't get admitted.
Right.
And the way the law works is if a person walks in the door at the mental health emergency center as a voluntary patient, there is nothing that facility can do to hold that person against their will. They literally would have to call the police to have the police come and initiate an emergency detention.
Which the police aren't going to do. They've got enough issues to deal with.
So their hands are tied a bit. When the person comes there under emergency detention and law enforcement custody, then the next step in the process is for a physician at that center who's a designee of our department, of the treatment director of our department, to assess the case to make sure that person actually meets criteria. So they have a treatable mental illness, they have a treatable mental illness, and that they're imminently dangerous to self or others. They have to sign a statement that's called the treatment director supplement, and then the case proceeds.
So let me, look, I don't pretend or profess to be a doctor, but I do have some common sense. And if a person walks in to that facility and the loved one knows that their loved one and have seen with their own eyes and know that this person is a danger, the doctor's not going to be able to discern that in his 20 minutes of talking with that patient. There's no way a doctor can, you know, discern that immediately in 20. Listen, I'm just challenging the way a system is, and not Milwaukee County Mental Health, because you got to, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is here. We'll be right back.
Mental health challenges impact us all in some way. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services is working hard to meet these challenges, ushering a new model of mental health care, redesigned with you in mind. This community-based system meets people where they're at, with culturally competent services, better access, and no wrong doors to begin the journey. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services, here for you, close to home. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health emergency, contact 414-257-7222. Mental health challenges impact us all in some way. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services is working hard to meet these challenges, ushering a new model of mental health care, redesigned with you in mind. This community-based system meets people where they're at, with culturally competent services, better access, and no wrong doors to begin the journey. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services, here for you, close to home. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health emergency, contact 414-257-7222.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference. At aceyourretirement.org, in just 3 minutes, you'll get a free personalized retirement plan. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon with a high of 45. Southeasterly winds around 5 miles an hour. Lows level off around 33 tonight. Overcast skies. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Highs around 36. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times Friday with daytime highs approaching 30. 34 Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 36 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Michael Lappin. He is the behavioral administrator of the Behavioral Health of Department of Health and Human Services of Milwaukee County. Excuse me. And I don't know where the time went, Mike, but there's so many tentacles to this. And the doors are always open here on my program to discuss these things, because I think part of all of this is people not knowing how it works. I mean, it's not easy to discern the roles and how to even engage. So, I mean,
I would just say, if you or a loved one out there in the audience has a mental health challenge or is in crisis, call our crisis line, 414-257-7220. The call goes to someone who will ask you a few questions. They will try to route your call to the right crisis clinician. I can't tell you that every challenge will be immediately resolved, but that is a good place to start. The best scenario here is if you have a loved one who's struggling with mental health, that they find the thing that helps them and it works for them, and that involuntary care has to be reserved for a very small population. To the person who has a mental illness who may not understand that they're sick, they feel like they're on probation. They feel like their choices are being taken away, and it actually makes them less likely in some cases to get the help they need. So as frustrating and hard as it is for families, having some patience and grace for the system to try to align and try to find that thing that entices that person to take part in the system. And sometimes it's housing, sometimes it's a job. We have to find the thing that the customer, the person with mental illness, sees as a help for them.
So I asked you during the break, how do we align with states similar to ours and their decisions on people with mental illnesses being able to say, hey, I don't want to take my meds anymore, and leave it at that. You mentioned Wisconsin is a little more liberal.
Yeah, we're certainly one of the most liberal states in our state law as far as protecting civil liberties and the burden of proof required to take to put someone on a commitment. Milwaukee County is the most liberal community, or has become the most liberal community in the state. So that we very well could be in the top few counties in the nation around this. I can tell you why. A, we have been a progressive state for a very long time, and these are civil rights issues for so many. The other is some of the laws that actually changed the national landscape here actually originated in Milwaukee. In fact, the case that created the requirement for imminent dangerousness in the law federally, the federal decision, was actually a patient who was at the Behavioral Health Division at one time. So locally, the public defenders, the Legal Aid Society, they've really embraced this, that the people with mental illness, their rights trump their family's feelings, what they want. And the threshold is this imminent dangerousness has become the issue. And you could argue all day that I would say, yes, there are people in crisis who have a crisis situation, but who aren't imminently at risk for death. We can't force that.
But you know, but you know, when we talk about they're not imminently at risk for death, for anyone to say that and they don't know what's going on with that person, it's easy to make that statement. Whether or not that statement can be backed up by fact is only predicated on whether or not the person loses their life. It's a gamble with a statement like that to me, because there are people who have certainly lost their lives based on somebody's decision that they're not imminently in danger. And so when people can make those determinations, and loved ones who see it and know it, I totally ignored in that, because again, a three-party petition that is challenging at best, you just have to say, hey, somebody's missing something here. The determinations that have been made on how this thing is handled are being done by, I get it, professionals. You know, but professionals should sometimes understand that they don't know it all, and that there are people who know better than anybody else the danger that their loved one is in. Nobody can determine that better than the blood of the person we're talking about. And so when we have a system that doesn't take that into consideration and into account, Mike, I think it's probably where we're having the differences, right?
My sense of the challenge for the professionals here, and, you know, just a shout out to all the staff that do this work, you know, the caseworkers, I was a case manager in a community support program serving, you know, people who used to live at the Behavioral Health Division long-term care unit. So this is work that I've done myself. Clients, people are people who, just like every other person alive, makes bad decisions sometimes and decisions with consequences. Even though it seems obvious that they should continue to take their meds, they make the decision not to for really good reasons, probably.
Because they're mentally ill.
And sometimes, I mean, also the drugs have side effects, you know, and less so today. But, you know, years ago, you gained a bunch of weight.
I know.
You didn't feel that great. And so there was incentives that, you know, people made those choices. I think the challenge, though, is that professionals can only... The decisions that a doctor at the mental health emergency center has to make are based on the evidence before them. Because of the way the law works, the only dangerousness they can consider is the dangerousness documented on the form for emergency detention. So the paper that the cops write, they get handed to the doctor,
to me,
and they look
ridiculous.
At that. So one just suggestion, and again, one way that families could have a more impact here is, we have a CART program, Crisis Assessment Response Teams. So that means a behavioral health clinician is paired with a Milwaukee police officer. We have staffing, we have funding for 6 teams. There's only really 3 teams in circulation on most days because we don't have all the positions filled. So I just want to, we are struggling to hire people to do this work because it's hard and it's complex and it requires a lot of skill. But if a CART team comes out on the scene, the clinician can work with the family to collect the information and document it in such a way that could very well improve the chances that the dangerousness that the family is communicating gets conveyed through the system.
So look, Mike, we got to run. I want to thank you. I want to continue to make sure that we don't leave it here.
Yeah, absolutely.
That we continue to do everything we can on this end to make sure to get information out to people, because it's a life and death matter. So thank you. Thanks to everybody from Department of Health and Human Services. We got to go. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand,
Make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.